Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to yet another Brit and Yankee podcast, this time our Corridor 55 special release series, and we are live from Miskatonic Brewing in Darien.
All right, quiet and down now. Live from the Brit and Yankee pub studios, another Brit and Yankee craft beer podcast. I can hear the pints being pulled right now.
Knock the wild dune, bring the drums in, let's have a party. Pump up the bitter. Shh, test it. Pump up the bitter. Pump up the bitter.
Take it away, lads. You are paying for that beer, aren't you?
Pump up the bitter.
Yes, thank you very much. In fact, I think we did actually pay for this first beer. So. Welcome, everybody, to the Brit and Yankee Craft Beer Podcast. My name is Phil Clark. I am the landlord of the Brit and Yankee Pub. With me tonight are a couple of co-hosts. We have a rotation of co-hosts here at the pub. With me is Mike Lingerfelter, who is the original Yankee. We've been doing this podcast for about, 10 years, something like that.
11 years.
Something.
This year will be 11.
Yep, 11, there we go. And welcome, Mike. And then next to him, of course, is our technical expert, who is Mr. Chuck Fort from Church Street Brewing. Hello, Chuck.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Thank you very much. That's his signature entry there, I tell you. We have a special series of podcasts that we're doing with breweries who are on the I-55 corridor. And each of these breweries, there's nine of them at the present, probably going to be another two or three popping up by the time we finished here. But each one of these is within 4 miles of an exit of I-55. And Darien, Illinois is one of those. And we're at Miskatonic Brewing. And our special guests this evening are over on the right-hand side, waiting at the door, because apparently his wife may be giving birth to a child at any moment. Is Mr. Josh Mowry. Welcome, Josh.
I'm sure she'll do all right.
She'll be all right, right?
Yeah, I'm sure she'll be fine. And, yeah, I'm on the emergency exit side here.
And then sitting next to him is the head brewer, and I've been practicing his name all afternoon, and when I came in, I got it wrong. But
drum roll, please.
John Wiskovich. Wiskovich! That was it! I got it right!
No, you got it the second time.
Okay,
full all right. Pronounced
Smith. Too bad. That's good. God, you know, when you got a name when you don't have any vowels in it, well, you do actually. There's an I and an E, right? So you're all pretty good. John is the head brewer here, and in this series we have four different beers. The first three come from the brewery where we are, and they are the flagship beer, and then we have a showcase beer and an inspiration beer, and we'll go into what each of those are as we come along. We're also expecting our chain beer, which comes from the brewery, in the next podcast. And with a bit of luck, he'll be coming along around about 7 o'clock. So we'll hang on to that mystery beer for now. So first of all, if you want to join the Brit and Yankee podcast, please go out to Facebook, like our page. You can contact us by email at pints@thebritandyankee. So without further ado, hi guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. There we go. We did the hello, hello, hello. Without Chuck.
Hello. That's his line.
So in this series, we picked three beers, and it's been your choice, but the beers have certain categories. The first beer we're going to do is your flagship beer, and your flagship beer is one that you would always have on tap and is something that is kind of a standard that you can get at the brewery. So tell us a little bit about what the beer is and why it was chosen.
Well, John designed.
And this is Josh.
John designed the beer, so I'm going to let him talk about that stuff at least. But I will say, if there's one thing John and I probably agree on, is that not to cause any controversy, we're really not big on the flagship moniker for a brewery of our age, only because
I'm sorry.
I generally view the flagship as something that's sort of like a tried and true. It's really carried the brewery for a long time. It's remained fairly timeless. Ours is more of like the largest tugboat. In the entire the navy that we have here, but It's definitely like something like Allagash White's definitely a flagship. You know, that beer pretty much almost defines the brewery while also, you know, being part of a much larger whole.
And the last time we were out here actually interviewing you was in a couple of years. No, more than a couple of years ago, wasn't it? 2015. Oh, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, a couple of years ago. And since then, you have gone from, you know, a fairly small environment. You've expanded into next door. You put
There's
it in
more stainless
on.
Steel, for sure.
So
yeah.
So tell us a little bit, perhaps, before we talk about the beer that we're all tasting, and give us a chance to sup it up and test it. Tell us a little bit about how the history of how Miskatonic came to be, and especially about the name.
Well, the name is a literary reference to a place that doesn't actually exist, but is in a bunch of stories by an author. He's been long dead about 100 years. His name's H.P. Lovecraft. We weren't trying to be super obscure, I promise. It was more about sort of what H.P. Lovecraft to us meant to just the art of writing at the time. He's considered one of the first modern American horror authors. He's someone who's fairly forgotten by most readers. He's got a very he's got a very hardcore following amongst a small niche group of people, for sure. But he's someone who's definitely not a day-to-day name. Pretty much almost every author alive, I would say, knows him, knows about his influence. He's extremely influential on other authors. And we really took that to heart. It's really cool to see someone whose work has reverberated to inspiring lots of great work everyone today might know. But he himself is really just another sort of stone in the tower. And we really like that idea when anything creative comes to mind. The idea that you're just sort of another link of the chain, you're taking it one step further. You have about 1,000 people before you to thank for getting you to where you were in terms of an art or a craft. And we just wanted to sort of key into that sort of idea of inspiration. He also liked to write about things that seemed very normal and then got very weird. We felt like craft really embodies that quite a bit. And there's a lot of fun imagery you can have there as well. And thus the logo, which is a woman who looks rather respectable until you get to the tentacles that are coming from beneath her dress. So,
and Ashley, your logo is really interesting because every time I have a T-shirt with your logo on it, and I wear it with pride, but everybody says, oh, look at that, a Victorian lady. And then they do a double take, and there she has the tentacles.
Yeah, the slow burn is nice sometimes with people who are in the tap room and have never seen our logo before. They stopped by after just sort of seeing that there was a craft brewery in the area. And about half an hour in, sometimes you'll see someone like tilt their head while looking at it, and I'm like, you just saw it, didn't you?
Yeah, it's always shocking how they miss the tentacles coming out of the back of her dress.
Do you have any tentacles coming out of your beer? No, I don't.
None that we're aware of.
So before we kind of get into how you guys started out, we've had a chance to taste your Wise Fools IPA. And now, obviously, Wise Fools is a reference in H.P. Lovecraft.
No, actually, most of the names of our beers, we didn't want to get too cute with the Lovecraft stuff. So we actually haven't had a beer yet named after anything Lovecraft related. But we do have them named sort of literary archetypes, so just universal characters you find in all kinds of stories. So Wise Fool's a pretty classic one. I mean, he kind of was perfected by Shakespeare in a bunch of his theater plays. Just someone who no one listens to but is speaking the truth the whole time. It felt right for our sort of central. Again, we're not huge on the word flagship, but it's certainly the beer that's been around since we were opened, and it's our, you know, number one favorite in the tap room and wholesale and everything. So it's definitely, you know, a main mast in our float, if you will.
Hey Chuck, you've had your nose in the beer. What do you reckon on the aroma?
Yeah, I've been working on it. I think I'm getting a little bit of orange peel, mild orange peel. Tangerine maybe in the nose a little bit. Every once in a while I get a little bit of like sweetness, malt sweetness in between the two. Very nice.
And I do note in your description that it says it is an American IPA with an English sensibility. Does that mean we have to drink it on the left hand side of the road or what?
No, we have to wait a little bit for it to get warmer. It's a little too cold to be English right now. It's an American IPA. There's a fair amount of Cascade and Centennial going on there, so certainly some profound citrus there. We do use a fair amount of Vienna malts, so we wanted a sort of softer malt backbone, something with a little bit more layered complexity. There's a sort of a toasty brioche kind of thing going on there. So it does present itself as a little bit more of a
malt sweetness. Wait a minute, that's French, not English.
Well, it's sort of a UN of beers. Let's just go with that.
Okay.
But yeah, it's sort of a sweet, bready kind of pillow for those sort of intense citrus.
Yeah, you get
that
in the nose sometimes between the hop notes that come
out. Yeah, the philosophy is to have an IPA that's something for everybody. If you're not a massive hop head, or if you're not really a fan of bitter beers, this has got a certain amount of complexity that you can appreciate. If you're somebody who's a super beer nerd, there's some layers there that you're going to appreciate. But we save really crazy, extreme stuff for other parts of our portfolio.
And I'm going to go to Mr. Lingo over there, because he's one who's not a big IPA guy. So give us your consumer opinion on this.
My consumer opinion. Well, and he was kind of touching on some of the stuff that I was thinking of. Being not a person that would generally go after an IPA, this one, I do have a little bit of a cold, but this one still comes through. Not as heavy as I would have thought, but it also has a very nice smoothness to it. You still are getting the hoppiness, which I can appreciate, but not so much that blows the back of my head off. And this one is very, very pleasant, very drinkable for someone like me that it doesn't like it overly hoppy. This is something that I would actually look forward to drinking.
Yeah, this is really easy drinking.
Thank you.
Nice. It doesn't overemphasize the hoppiness that is so much the way these days.
Yeah, we're proud to hang gateway drug on this. If this gets you to more hoppy beers, hey,
good.
That's okay with us too.
But the flavor and everything, like Chuck was saying, the citrus and everything really is pronounced in this more, because the hoppiness doesn't take over that. It really accentuates all those other flavors that you're getting into in there.
I think it walks the line. I can appreciate
that.
But it's still an IPA. I mean,
right.
It's still got enough of the resiny character. Not a lot. Absolutely. Just a little bit.
Yeah. It has a little bit of a dry finish to it.
So it's a little too big to be an IPA, I think.
Yeah, like Chuck says, it does walk a line. There's some bitterness there. There's some soft malt to sort of cushion that blow.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the idea.
So you guys have quite a pedigree in your background, in one way or another.
Calling us dogs?
What?
Pedigree. Calling us dogs?
No.
It's a terrible thing to say.
Oh, there you go.
What
a terrible thing to say, yeah. No, actually, pedigree is breeding, right? So you bred.
Naughty.
So the background from both of you, I think, was originally home brewers. But I think you come from slightly different approaches, where you've come, Josh, from a paralegal background?
Well, I was originally, and then I wound up, I became a paralegal because I didn't want to commit 3 years of law school tuition to find out that I hated working in a law firm, which, was probably a good decision because I hated working in a law firm. So was a hobbyist, and then married into a family with two brewers, and was like, wait, they pay you guys Monday through Friday to do this? This sounds like I'm in the wrong gig. So I got accepted to a brewing science and engineering program at the American Brewers Guild in Vermont, and actually gave notice at my job the week I got accepted, and worked at a Trader Joe's until I could find a brewing job, and then took my classes, and was at Two Brothers Brewing Company, was the head of canning when I left there, and that's when we opened up this place. So,
and you're kind of the business manager here at Miskatonic.
Production management, yep.
And then, John, you've come via one of those smaller breweries out
Goose Island. You may have heard of it.
They're not very well known, but you've been other places as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like Josh, American Brewers Guild graduate. Interned at Goose Island, and luckily during the internship, a brewer left, so I've hit the ground running. I spent about a little over 6 years at Goose. Then was the head brewer at the Gordon Biersch, now Rock Bottom, right down the road here in Bolingbrook. On your I-55 corridor, I might add. Keeping it close to Route 66 here. And then Josh came up to me with the idea, and it sounded very well fleshed out, and sounded like a lot of fun. So we went from there.
So we've enjoyed this first flagship beer, but whilst you're brewing, I always like to ask you guys, I don't know how much you get involved in the brewing, Josh, but when you guys are in the office together, do you brew and have music? You have something blaring in the background. What are your favorite? What are your favorite bands?
I think that depends on who's on the brew deck, really. It depends on what mood they're in.
I mean, a pretty wild span.
I don't think anyone here isn't eclectic in their music taste in terms of the production crew. Everyone's got like four very different branches.
There's only nine of us, but there's definitely extremes in the nine.
Yeah. Well, even just the four production people.
So what was your favorite band?
If you include the whole company, there's Viking metal, there's classic rock, there's prog rock, there's all kinds of stuff.
So what's your favorite band?
Depends on what mood I'm in, to be honest. I was an upright bass player in college. I was a music performance major. And so it really depends on my mood. But I think anything that's got some energy to it, I mean, it's, you know.
And John?
You look like
a classical
suit.
Guy.
Certainly. I mean, my brother's 16 years older than me, and I'm 48. So I had 7 feet of vinyl to play with when I was little. Yeah, a lot of classic rock.
One person like in the brewery sort of dominate the music? Like we have like one person that just sort of like we just leave them in charge of the music.
Whatever they play. I don't even think we really have too much power struggle. I think a lot of us are like, oh yeah, man, let's do this today.
To a certain degree, with the exception of TJ and the Viking metal,
but TJ knows don't care about his feelings, and he knows that none of that is going to play while we're working.
He's not on sales calls a lot, so it doesn't come into play all that often. But every once in a while, I'm like, I'll turn to Josh and I go, what the hell is this? So angry and Nordic.
Yes.
But outside of that, I think the sort of ebb and flow of people's musical taste is actually quite. Everyone really enjoys it. So there really isn't a lot of like domination or like grabbing the wire kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And I think the reason we ask that question is because music to brew beer by sometimes is important to have people in the right mood to brew.
Oh, no doubt.
Beer.
You know, if you're canning, there's a certain kind of music
Can heat?
Well,
maybe.
I mean, certain music will get you in the mood to canning or bottling, right?
Well, I mean, I think there's a rhythm to what we do. I mean, when you work production, there is a rhythm and sort of pace to the day.
Yeah.
And the music helps get you in that mindset, I think, for sure.
So you talked about the canning line. We'll take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll get into a little bit of that because that's something brand new for you. So let's find out what it's like to work the canning line. And we're back, and we have beer number two in our series, which is, we've called it the Showcase Beer. Hope that fits in with your category okay.
Sure.
And the reason we call it that is it's a beer that you've brewed that you feel is really kind of something a little bit different, and you want to let people know about it.
Yeah,
It's
got a little oddity to it, but I think it's pretty representative of our ethos here.
Certainly.
And so it's the Gardner wit beer.
Yes, the Belgian style
wit. I must admit, when I was talking to you just off mic, I thought it was a Saison. But a wit beer is a very distinct difference to a Saison, even though close in where they are, but there is distinct differences. What exactly is different from wit to Saison?
I would say that the big difference between a wit and a Saison, probably, because a Saison can have some oat and wheat to it, but a wit beer has a central... part of its grain bill being from wheat and or oats, and also spicing traditionally, whereas most Saisons generally are not spiced if it's to be a traditional farmhouse. John can also expound on that.
I would concur.
Yeah.
It's a Belgian wheat beer, and a Saison is typically not a wheat beer.
Yeah, and a lot of the Saison character just comes from the yeast. I mean, a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then your wit, of course, like you said, you can put coriander or whatever in there.
Botanicals.
The quote-unquote secret ingredient, which is always chamomile.
Yeah. Chamomile. So you've done something a little bit different with this. You've kind of made it into a bit of a botanical item, right?
Well, we wanted to essentially take the sort of each individual component out of a fairly traditional wit beer, orange peel, coriander, and chamomile, and sort of replaced those with a different botanical set that we thought played well off of each other. And actually, we chose this set of botanicals off of, I like to cook a lot at home and bake a little bit, and I make lemon bars with a lavender vanilla sugar in the crust. So wanted to take all those components, and so we use lemon peel in place of orange peel, lavender in place of chamomile, and vanilla in place of the coriander.
So how do you put lavender into a beer? I mean, I know a lavender bush, right? I've seen it. I can't imagine you're going out picking them and then throwing it into the...
No, we throw the whole bush right in the fermenter. We jam it on the top, like you said.
You knock the dirt off.
But how do you do it? I mean, no, for those people who don't brew beer, how do you add these adjuncts?
It depends.
Well, by the way, that's brewer's talk for shit added to beer.
It's non-traditional ingredients.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you.
Lavender is often in herbal tea, so we just took a page off of the herbal tea route and cold steep culinary lavender buds in water overnight. To essentially create a lavender tea, and then we titrate it year to year. Obviously, the lavender can change a little bit, so we always make sure we titrate it out and see if we want the same concentration to match with the lemons that we have that time around. So
if anybody's coming to Miskatonic, whilst we sip on the beer and cogitate, we'll pass judgment on it in just a second.
Always.
When you walk into Miskatonic, you got a wonderful graffiti on the wall, which is always absolutely amazing. But when they come in here, what is your feeling for people? How will you want them to feel your place?
I think the overwhelming feeling we want them to have is that they're welcome and that it's a welcoming environment. And a lot of that comes through our staff. When we go through reviews, it's usually the, if not the first thing, it's usually on the first couple of things, talking about how great the staff is, and the bartender was this, and the bartender was that. We can have anything up on the walls and anything on the taps, but if you hate the bartender, you're never coming back. I think the people is definitely, I realize that's not a decoration, but it's definitely integral to the experience in the tap room is having staff that are knowledgeable and friendly and welcoming.
And who's our bartender tonight? Is he those qualities?
Oh, that's Paul.
That's Paul.
He's okay. Good people.
Yeah, he's good folks. Wave at us, Paul. There you go.
Yeah. Now get back to work. I think that John would agree with me. One of the things that drew me into the craft beer community was a real sense of inclusiveness and sort of celebration of something we all love, and the idea that really anybody can be a part of it. And to get on a soapbox for 2 seconds, unfortunately, I feel like there has been a subset of the culture of craft beer lately that it's more about rising above the crowd in terms of knowledge or exclusivity. And I think that's the opposite of what got me into it. I mean, I love cooking. I love thinking about what I'm drinking or eating. So that was a huge component of why I got into it. But what made me stay a part of it was really seeing how excited everyone could be together about things and about sharing. I mean, bottle shares at beer releases is a great example of how that sort of inclusivity has popped up. It's all about sharing with people. Nobody wants to drink a bomber by themselves. Well, most people don't, at least.
Right.
But it's really about, it's not about drinking the beer just by yourself in most cases. In most cases, it's about sharing it with somebody.
And you talked about your love of food, not only beer but food. Have you thought about doing a collaboration with a local restaurant?
We actually just finished a Citra Pilsner that we were making as the house beer at the Bien Trucha restaurant group. They have Bien Trucha in Geneva and Ato de Madre in Glen Ellen and Cubo in Naperville. They're about to open up a cocktail bar on top of a hotel in Naperville as well. And so we have cans of it in one place that doesn't have draft, and draft in the other places of this. Essentially, John makes a killer traditional Pilsner, which is no surprise given his background of doing lager brewing. And we just like literally dry hop just enough Citra to bridge that awesome traditional Sass character without becoming this like Citra monster.
Oh, okay. Well, what I was actually getting at was doing a food pairing with, say, 3 or 4 beers.
Oh yeah,
we've doing a special event. You know,
yeah, we've done those at Chuck's here down the street, Taylorson's in Aurora. I can't even remember all of them. It's been literally dozens, I think, since we've been open the almost 3 years.
Fire it up.
Fire it up. Yeah.
Yep. Fired
that
up was a great beer dinner. The celebration of food and beer together. I mean, we actually are one of our senior brewers AJ, he was a affineur for a time, where it's just literally an individual who ages cheeses in a cheese cave. So he's got a great palate with cheeses and beer specifically. So we've done an event where we did a pairing of cheeses, like real true craft cheeses and craft beer. So.
Yeah, 250 people. It was a lot of fun. Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
That's really good. You mentioned about brewing beers. So let's ask each of you, well, I don't know, Josh, if that still applies to you, but I'll start with John, okay? Then we'll come back to Josh. Josh, he's picking up his phone, checking it, see whether his wife's got in the hospital and hasn't called him.
The eagle has not landed.
Get down here! Anyway, John, which beer do you really like to brew? And then I guess, actually, let me add a question to that. If you had to brew a beer that you haven't brewed yet, what would you like to brew?
Okay. I get that a lot. Like when I'm behind the bar, people ask me, what's your favorite? I said, well, I brew these. So it's like asking me, which is my favorite child? You know, like I like them all, or we wouldn't really brew them to a certain degree. A lot of times people ask me when they ask, like, what's your favorite? I usually say whatever the seasonal is right now, because I know exactly how many kegs there are of it left. And I know exactly how long I have until I can't drink it anymore. So to a certain degree, it has to do with seasonality. I really like Bring Ingenue. That's a really interesting beer. The yeast is a really interesting strain. As far as nuts and bolts of it, they're all fairly similar. Barrel aging things is always really fun, but it's also sort of frustrating because you have a really long wait until you can see the fruits of that labor. Second part, what could I brew that we don't brew? Is that right?
It was, what would you like to brew had you that you haven't brewed?
That we haven't brewed. We've had a hibiscus hefeweizen sort of on the back burner. And it's one of those beers where we sort of have it sort of scheduled, and then the schedule sort of morphs. And we're like, all right, we'll just set that one aside and we'll do it later. And that's the one that sort of gets bumped a lot. And I think that would be really fun because there's a certain tartness to the hibiscus that's a really interesting sort of twist on that sort of sweeter banana thing. And it really melds well with the clove character of that yeast. I think it also sort of lays nicely on sort of the richness that is a majority wheat malt bill. So I think that's going to be a really fun one when we get around to doing it.
And Josh.
Yes, sir.
I guess you look at it from a business aspect as well. Do you reckon would sell that you haven't sold, that you haven't tried yet?
I would say that I only get on the brew deck maybe once a quarter. Unfortunately, it's just a lot of the other juggling stuff. But nothing makes you appreciate that day on the brew deck more than having the rest of the days of the quarter not go that way. So I would say that my favorite beer to brew is whichever one makes me a little sharper. Often that's something I haven't brewed in a while, or it's a new style that I've thought way too much about, tried way too many versions from other people of. One of my favorite quotes from anyone is Eric Clapton once said, like, if you stop listening to other musicians, you cease being a musician. I think that there's a lot of like truth there in terms of I can't stand people that expound on the other people in their field doing things without giving all of those things a shot. So I like the beer that is sort of a new thing for me, not necessarily because it's a new thing, but more because it definitely stretches your ability to keep growing as a brewer. And in terms of my favorite beer to drink, that's really up to the mood, for sure. There's not many styles I do not like, period. So there are a few that I really am only academically interested in, but most I will find a time or place to enjoy it.
So let's find out what our opinions on the gardener is. Is this, by the way, is it Chauncey Gardner? No, okay, never mind. Chuck, you've been sitting over there sipping it. I must admit, from an aroma perspective, nothing has jumped out to me at this point. But when you get to the flavor.
First thing is, we're talking about lemon and vanilla and everything. This is, in my opinion, it's a very delicate beer, first of all. So, and it looks wonderful, just looking at it. It still has its head. It's been sitting here for a while. And you don't get the vanilla right away. For me, what happens is that you drink it and you get the lemon and some of the other little things that are going on there. And then you burp it up. I mean, how I do it? It's in my stomach, right? So, and that's when you get a little bit of that vanilla. Vanilla is great because it helps blend things, in my opinion. like it helps blend some of the fruit character. And so they didn't like clobber you with vanilla. It's not going to be a big vanilla bomb. No, it's just like, in my opinion, from what I'm tasting, it must just be just a very measured amount of vanilla. But the rest of it is right down the middle as far as balance when you drink it. It leaves you with a nice finish.
Yeah, a lot of times you can look at flavor we'll be talking a fair amount about music. I like to think of flavor as a symphony where there's a lot of different instruments, each providing a certain element to that experience.
Yeah.
And then there's Eddie Van Halen with a guitar. Yeah. So sometimes you have a beer where there is a note or there is a flavor that is meant to sort of be incredibly dominant.
Yeah.
This beer is definitely the symphony, not the Eddie Van Halen solo.
Yeah, I would think so.
Almost the way that I think a good goza will have more salinity than saltiness. The salt almost adds a mouthfeel to it. The vanilla is there more to lend a roundness to the finish. And I find actually the vanilla and the lavender really like make each other change dramatically versus when they're naked alone.
I love this beer. I think it's, as you said, very delicate. I'm not getting too much lavender, but that combination of the lemon and the vanilla is great.
Thank you.
So I want to ask you, just to go out on this segment, what are you watching on TV, guys? What are you streaming?
What are you streaming?
You streaming any MASH episodes there, John?
I love MASH. I don't need to stream them. They're all already in here. I'm pointing to my forehead. Right now, we're watching the second season of Santa Clarita Diet on Netflix. I don't know if you are fans, but it is a zombie show.
Yeah, it is.
Zombie comedy.
Drew Barrymore.
Yes, quite good. And watching the finale tomorrow, so very excited.
And Josh? Sound like you got a lot of time to do it.
Honestly, we got a 3-year-old at home. My wife is very pregnant, so we get a lot of Netflix time after we're both ready to collapse at the end of the day with a toddler, especially her. She's working full time still. So I finally convinced her to give Silicon Valley a try on HBO. And stream it, and I'm so glad she finally gave it a shot. We've burned through all 4 seasons in, I would say, 3 weeks.
I was sure.
Because she was so resistant, and then we started watching, and she's like, this show's fantastic. It's a great show about exploring a culture of a certain place and certain group of people while making fun of it and still celebrating it at the same time, and I really dig that. That's just generally.
I thought for sure you were going to say Barry.
Huh?
Barry, right?
Oh, I'm watching Barry on my own right now.
Oh, okay. All right.
So it's more about sharing the experience of Silicon Valley with my wife.
So nobody's watching The Crown then? Okay, never mind.
It's on the list.
It's on the list.
It truly is.
I swear it is. It's unfortunately, it's right behind The Punisher, so it's going to be a little while.
Really, the one out of Britain you really should watch is called Broadchurch.
Broadchurch is fantastic.
Have you watched the series? We're on the second season, and it's fantastic.
Check out Peaky Blinders. So good.
You know, I can't understand a bloody word they say in that. So I have to put the subtitles
on. It's the language of violence. You don't even have to know what they're saying. It's good old-fashioned violence.
All right, guys, we'll be back with your third beer in just a second.
We are the bully. They are the blade. We walk in hand and march through the flame. The far we may fall, soon you'll see the candle that burns eternally. Take me down. No, you won't take me down. No, you.
So now we're coming to beer number 3, which is what we like to call our inspiration beer. The reason beer is created because it's something that has inspired you in some way. Now, we've had some interesting inspiration beers. One where one of our brewers, Ed Malnar over at Pollyanna, was praising another brewer. We've had beers that have come from the fine folks down in Texas, the Shiner. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, it's an inspiration beer. But they're all a different type of inspiration. So tell us what you've chosen and who chose it.
So I actually chose this one. This is soubrette. Soubrette is it's a term for a flirtatious woman in a theater. A theater production. It's like in a play. It's an archetype. But essentially, this is a wild ale that we cultivate. It's a Chardonnay barrel-aged golden, aged with Brettanomyces and strawberries, and then finished with just a touch of smoked strawberry. And this was inspired by, if there's one brewery in the entire world that I sort of look up to the most in terms of whole package inspiration, great recipes, quality control, sort of attitude of the brewery, it's Allagash out of Portland, Maine. So had a really phenomenal beer from them a few Fobabs ago. Avance, that's what it was. It was Avance, it was a strawberry sour. And I think strawberry is extremely hard to pull off. Avance and the other one that comes to mind, Jillian from Goose Island, are about two of the only strawberry beers I've had where I was like, this is an actual great example of strawberry use. Strawberry often washes out. Strawberry often gets kind of weird with its tartness sometimes. It's kind of a hard fruit to work with, I think. So after having Avance from Allagash at Fobab, I wanted to set about doing a small project. And actually, the beer itself came from a series of calamities that led to it. So we actually had a completely lost cause Chardonnay barrel that was leaking like crazy. We had filled it a few times with hot water to try and get it to plump up, and we didn't think it was going to work out, but it wound up holding some base, and then we added some Brettanomyces, let it go for about 4 months, I think, and then added 42 pounds of strawberry puree. Gave that a couple months and then finished it with 3 pounds of smoked strawberries before Fobab. And this was made before Fobab of last year, last November. And you can definitely tell the smoked strawberry has faded. The strawberry is still there. But
So I was going to ask a question about the smoked strawberries. How do you smoke a strawberry, right?
It's hard to keep.
You have to know the right people. Standard Market, a specialty grocery store out here in the western suburbs, they smoke their own meat. They have like a food grade large scale smoker. And so what's really fantastic is we've done a few different projects. They help us out there where we will be able to pick some good produce off of their floor and say,
Can you smoke three pounds
of this?
Time out. Isn't every smoker food grade?
Well, yeah, you know.
Actually,
the ones we use for like meats and everything. Okay. It kind of threw me with the food grade thing.
It's commercially food grade.
They can smoke them at really low temperatures, which I think.
Right.
If you just had like a Weber, it probably wouldn't be the wisest thing to do.
They can control humidity. They have because of their cheese aging and things of that nature.
Right.
They have a few things in their facility that allow them to control humidity, because they can then sort of make their own cured meat.
Right.
Things that go above and beyond just necessarily like a high temp smoker. They can do low temp smoker, so they can cold smoke strawberries, cold smoke peaches, plums, and you can have a lot of fun with that. So we keep that.
Is that almost like drying them out, almost like in a
you know, they're surprisingly still pretty moist. They definitely have been dehydrated, maybe, if I had to guess. I mean, obviously no expert, but 25% maybe dehydrated.
But
still, like, whatever overage we have, we keep in the cooler and we all sort of pop them like candy
for
the next week. I mean, a smoked strawberry is really surprisingly phenomenal.
Yeah. So I get that. And I had to really think, okay, where am I getting this smoked strawberry? And then just a brief instant in the middle of the sip,
mm-hmm.
I get that.
Yeah.
And then there's the subtlety of the strawberry. And then you get the nice tarty, soury kind of thing.
Yeah, the Brettanomyces
is tart or sour. I don't know.
It's a wild ale, so it's Brett character. It's more horsey and barnyard. It really isn't so much sour. Tart might be a better word, but honestly, it's less than tart.
I don't really get sour.
Yeah, and you really shouldn't, because it's not a souring bacteria.
And I have to tell you, I've never tasted a horse like this. So
if you've ever walked through a hay-laden stable with horses, you know what Brett smells.
Yeah, it smells like horse blink.
It has a very earthy, sweaty, horsey kind of thing. And these words are not pleasant, but they do work when you're drinking the liquid. But it's hard to sort of appreciate when somebody says, "Oh, it smells like a sweaty horse blanket." Like, that's not something I want to drink. Trust me, you do want to drink it.
I think what
it tastes delicious.
I think the tartness inside it is also coming from the strawberry tartness as well.
Sure.
And it's playing off the funky Brett.
This one's very confusing to me. I'm kind of glad I don't have I have a cold at this point, because I'm not a big smoky kind of guy.
It's subtle.
But I'm not I'm not getting any of that. But I am such in a quandary, because it's like I get the strawberry and I'm getting the sourness, and but the strawberry is not sweet. It's not super tart, but it's like there's so much going on in this beer.
I look at that as a compliment to the beer, because if every sip that you have, you kind of have a different journey on it.
Oh my God, yeah.
To put it that way, you know.
It's very complex.
And that's great, because you want to have more and more. But I think this is a kind of a sniff the glass, sipping beer.
Yeah. Quite honest. Well, it's very complex, it's definitely...
That's
saying,
putting
about.
It mildly, this yeah. is very complex. I
lot of times,
really like this
a lot of times
a lot.
When you add a fruit to a beer, especially, you'll get a lot of citric acid, and this doesn't have that.
No.
There's a little bit, but I mean, it's not over, you know, obviously there's a little, but usually what happens when people add fruit, not always, but it can get real, the citric acid can just take over. And that's not happening here, which is...
So in this particular case, this is something new for you. So if we were to move on to a topic that I wanted to explore, is what's new at Miskatonic? Because I know you've got a new space, you've got a new canning line. You're expanding.
Slowly but surely, yeah, we're growing out there. I mean, we've expanded. We're doing more and more small batches and cans. You know, we're really lucky that I remember when we started canning, just looking at sleeve pricing to do small runs of 40 cases or less, it priced it out based off of how expensive they were. And vendors have just gotten, you know, as more and more small breweries pop up, as more and more business comes across where they can do small volume without, you know, gouging you, it allows us to be a lot more creatively unchained in terms of what we can get out and package. And so it's made the 15-barrel systems become that perfect size, because if you split it up into some packaging, you can really almost make anything.
I think it used to be in the past that getting the beer out to people meant kegging it and getting it on premise. I think it's become more and more important to have small form packaging on an off-premise basis. It has teeter-tottered way to that side. For my money, having it be able to be bought off premise and shared, it seems like word of mouth and sharing that experience is way more important on that side. So having the ability to can and having the ability to can in small batches becomes more and more important the more and more breweries you have out there.
And I know at one point you had a barrel aged beer, the Flying Dutchman, that came in a rather unique package, if you will, for. That style of beer, which I would call a stubby, but it was the small 12-ounce kind of...
little grenade bottle.
And that was really good, in my opinion, because it was... In fact, I would say it was genius, because it gave you two of those, which you could either have both of them and share them, or you could just have the one. And believe you me, if you've had that Flying Dutchman, it's an intense, boozy beer, but in a good way. I'm not saying it's, you know, all alcohol, but yeah.
Well, we actually gave it a shot to do our latest barrel-aged beer that's in package in cans. We did two packs of 12-ounce cans.
Hey, wasn't it a wrapper?
Same volume.
Isn't he dead?
What's Belwitch?
No, two-pack.
No, two-pack. He is indeed dead.
I thought it was quad-pack.
Yeah. So you're gonna do barrel-aged in two-packs, right? That's a great idea.
Two-packs. Yeah, we got them behind the bar right now. Belwitch, our Imperial Stout, bourbon barrel-aged Imperial Stout, 15 months in the bourbon barrel. Has some really awesome tones of coconut from the barrel.
So I have a question for you folks here, Josh and John. I am told that you have an app for the smartphone. Is that true?
So we essentially wanted to be able to have a fairly approachable sort of mug club that's a little bit more widespread. So we have an app you can get on the Google Play Store, is it called? And
yes.
the Apple Store. And it essentially has a loyalty program on it for people to sign in and get points when they come in here. And also we let people know when we've had a special tapping, when we've got a food truck around, if there's an upcoming event at the tap room.
Wow. Are you guys like programmers? Is there a programmer?
We're not programmers. We just we have a contact who is.
Ah.
It allowed us to, you know, it's one of those things that it's actually turned into a lot like more fun a tool than we thought it would be. At first, we honestly were just taking a flyer on it. We're like, we'll see what this leads to, and it turned into quite the nice thing to communicate to people. So,
and I actually saw in one of the newsletters that comes out about craft beer that the folks out east in Six Point Brewery, we're actually going to do a release of a beer that was only available to people with the smartphone app. Any thoughts on that?
What is the...
I don't think It feels very markety. It doesn't... You know, again, going to back to all-inclusive, like...
Hipsters,
I mean, we have an employee who tried to wing it with a flip phone last year, even though he's 25. I mean, you know, we have all kinds, and I can't imagine like looking at somebody just because they don't like to app it up and be like, "Sorry, man, this one's not for you." Like, if you want to drink my beer, I'll get you my beer. It's not.
I can remember the days when a phone was just for making phone calls.
Right, for talking.
Sorry, I'm aging myself, right?
Yeah. No, that we talked about this a little bit as we were starting up, and I think it might be unique to say, hey, this beer's coming out the 21st, but, you know, like, send out the push to the app owners, like, you get it a day early, swing in Thursday, you know?
Yeah, I have no problem doing
that. There might be some
like
opportunities there, but, like, so we talk about the inclusivity and stuff.
What's the name of the app again?
It's just Miskatonic.
Miskatonic. What do you reckon?
Yeah, all you have to do is Google Miskatonic, or if you search on it, Miskatonic.
Chuck, you know that you don't know how to use a smartphone, because I text you all the time, and it takes you 12 years to get back to me.
I see them.
You just ignore them.
I see those texts. I see them.
This podcast turned into squashing some beefs, apparently.
Chuck does know how to answer
and,
the texts.
And then the other thing you got going on, I know, is that you're opening up your new space, which is next door, right? You've broken through.
Yeah, one of the nice side effects of running our canning line and getting our canning line is we had a shit ton of cans we needed to find space for. So we moved next door, and that allowed us to have more than just 12 barrels barrel aging in this one unit. So we now have almost 60 barrels that are barrel aging. We have a lot more barrel aged projects in the mix. We have a bigger cooler over there, and we actually strung up some lights, and you know, the production space is available for some private event stuff.
I bet you have your baby shower there. Has it happened yet? Have you? You haven't had
it's
the call.
Not yet. No, I'm sure everyone's been noticing me checking furiously, but no, this is the second baby. No one holds a crazy baby shower for that.
Speaking of the second space, May 5th we have our spring art bazaar. So we have a lot of artists and crafters coming out to sort of share their wares, as it were. Some live music, some food. So that if you really want to check out the second space and see what that looks like, it's an excellent opportunity to do so.
Really? So that's on May 5th, the 5th,
May
right?
5th. May Day. I do have that name.
May the 5th. Cinco de Mayo.
What are you doing on the 4th? May the 4th.
We're dressing up like Jedi.
I'm probably going to be watching some Star Wars.
No.
And cradling my child.
I will be brewing in my full-on Jedi costume.
There you go. Now, you strike me as more of a Darth Vader there, John.
I have a very impressive Jedi costume. I'll wear it to a podcast one of these days.
It's just an excuse to wear a bathrobe. Let's
your lack of hops disturbs me.
Beer, I am your father. Okay. Well, thank you very much for bringing this soubrette, because this has been quite a treat. It appears that I've got the bottom of the barrel here with all the good stuff in it.
That's right. You've got the bits.
I've got a meal in mine, which is really tasty. Now, do you have this on draft only?
We only have 5 gallons left in the whole wide world until the next batch is ready, so... Right, we put it on tonight just for you fellas.
All right.
As a matter of fact, it's been 3 months over aging in there, and I threw it on and immediately poured some things, which is why I'm currently enjoying a little bit of extra Brett in this one.
Yeah, there are plans for bigger quantities. This is definitely too tasty to keep small.
Yeah, this is a beer I'd like to see in a bottle somewhere, or a can, or whatever. However, is the best way to deliver it. But if you're listening to this podcast in 3 months' time, well, hey, you missed it. Come back. Thanks. We'll move on to our chain beer next.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to talking about the next one.
What?
I'm really looking forward to talking about the next one.
It's going
to
be tasty.
Good man. And we're back, and this is our final beer of the evening, which is our chain beer. And it's called the chain beer because it's the next link to the next brewery in our podcast series of Corridor 55 special release. And I'm glad to say that joining us is Kevin Baldus from Black Horizon Brewing, who is nary more than 5 to 10 minutes away from us up Route 83. Hello, yep. Kevin.
Hello, how are you doing?
We're doing good. So tell us what you bring, because it comes in unmarked cans. Well, it's always suspicious.
Yeah, I just canned it on the way before I came over. It's a Belgian pale ale. It's an all Simcoe, Cryo Simcoe, Belgian, that it's called Void Walker. And it should be released here probably in about a week, 2 weeks. So we just kegged it up in the last couple of days and canned it up, brought it over for you guys.
And so what we usually do on this segment is, because we have the guys from the Focus Brewery here, we like to have them pass judgment. And I think, you know, all of us in the craft, well, I say all of you in the craft beer industry, I can't count myself, but I'm a consumer, so there we go. We always like to discuss the beers. I'm gonna kick it off, and then I'll turn it over to John, because at present, I'm just enjoying the aroma of this beer. So, John.
Quintessential sort of bubblegum Belgian yeast character. Like, it's very evocative, very, very pronounced sort of aroma. Pairs really nicely. Simcoe, you said?
Simcoe.
Yeah, it pairs really nicely with that sort of juicy fruit Simcoe kind of thing. So that's a, I won't lie, Belgian hoppy beers tend to, I tend to not enjoy them as much, because oftentimes the yeast character and the hop notes do not play well together. This is actually kind of a really, really nice combo, you know, that that sort of heavy bubblegum with that sort of juicy fruit is something I'm really enjoying.
Josh?
Yeah, I would agree. If there's one thing I could say I like best about this is the play with the yeast and the hops. Anything Simcoe, I generally, yeah. I'm a huge fan of Simcoe. So
it's hard, hard to find. Simcoe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Simcoe, Amarillo, Citra, like so many.
Sometimes the finish on Simcoe can be rough, but other than that, the aroma and flavor is almost always fantastic. But yeah, the bubblegum is definitely... like, I actually would not have guessed that Simcoe and Bubblegum would have played as well together, so I'm very happy with it. Did Alex make this?
Yes.
It's terrible. Yeah. It's just terrible.
That's right.
Alex is... So we should say Alex...
A little backstory, no, maybe. This,
Yeah.
John and Josh know us very, very, very well. So
Alex was a member of our team over here...
I gotta tell you, I don't know where you get this bubblegum crap from, because I don't know what sort of bubblegum you're chewing, but it ain't like any bubblegum I've had in the UK.
It's British bubblegum, tastes asparagus.
Yeah, this is Bazooka Joe's.
Yeah, I'd say Bazooka Joe's. Okay. Yeah.
So you guys have been open for just under a year, right?
Yes, since July.
And July is going to be your first anniversary?
July 14th is going to be our 1 year anniversary party.
Bastille Day.
Yes.
All right. Are you going to brew something French?
No.
Okay.
Serving lots of cheese.
I don't have an ounce of French in me. Yeah. Everything around France, but not French. Yeah.
And, you know, when I was there, you had a delicious selection of beers. I think you'd only been open for, what, maybe a couple of months or something?
Yeah.
It was a sporadic opening of about three breweries within about 2 weeks.
And
these are one of them.
Yeah.
So you guys have done really well. Whereabouts is your brewery?
If you were getting off 55, you'd go north on 83 to about 75th Street, go east about one block, and we're about the second building on the right-hand side on Quincy, 7560 South Quincy Street.
And you guys have to choose three beers, your quote-unquote flagship, sorry, Josh, and your showcase, and then an inspiration beer, which, you know, we heard about the inspiration beer from these guys, so it's something that maybe inspired you to brew. So think long and hard.
Sure. Yeah, we're still establishing that our flagships. I mean, yeah. We're turning over beers. We're up to about 65 different beers already that we've had.
That porter better be a part of it.
What's that?
Porter better be a part of it. They make a fantastic English porter.
Yeah.
So a question I like to ask when two breweries are sitting side by side, do you either of you taste each other's beers to keep up with the competition, to see how the quality of the other beer is, to get ideas?
I think it's, like I said before, it's always an exchange of ideas. I think that, I think the best example for myself personally is the NE IPA. I had three or four really bad NE IPAs and wrote off the style completely, and really didn't take my own advice and was pretty tone deaf to trying them. And it was just by luck that someone had shared with me an NE IPA that was like, well, this is going to be just as bad as the first three. And it was a very well thought out, well executed beer. It was completely different than the lower quality ones I had had before, and it really opened me up to not being so close minded about something like that. I still have very strong feelings about the majority of any IPAs that are made. I think it's a very hard style to pull off correctly, and I think it still has some shortfalls in terms of stability. But if I had completely written off that style, I would have been completely unaware of something that's also a very important trend right now in our industry. So it should be seen as a challenge to try and move forward. And it's another reason that everyone should be trying each other's beers. And again, this is inclusive. It's a group. It's about sharing our things with each other. And we should be also allowing people to share their things with each other.
Yeah, I'd say it's not so much like keeping up with the competition. It's just sharing what each other does. We are so close to each other, but I don't see it as competition. I really don't. It's just move around and try each other's beers. And
yeah, I work the bar some Thursday nights, and after I shut down, if I have time, I'll run over to Black Horizon or Skeleton Key, one of our closest neighbors.
Now Alex and I stop by in here, so it's
and that's what we find, that it's typically not competition; it's more collaboration and cooperation between the guys. There's only a few of the breweries out there that might get a little bit uppity, but I've yet to find them.
That's not going to work out in your best interest if you're going to do it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want to isolate yourself.
It's too small. Craft beer breweries like this are becoming the locals of a lot of people of what I would call, I guess from my perspective, the new millennium, because I'm the same age as your brother, by the way. So, I see them as coming in here for their new locals. They come in, they know they can get a really good beer, they can get a chat with the bartender, and it's a friendly confines, which is what you're looking for, So, Kevin, thank you so much for bringing this beer.
Thank you.
I have
Appreciate
to say
it.
That this is hitting all my spots. I'm particularly like Belgian IPA. Do you like it, Chuck?
Yes, I do like it. I've been drinking it for a while. Certainly got the Belgian character. I mean, you get that in the nose and everything. The Simcoe is has a fruity nature to it. And there's also some caramel malt sweetness kind of buried in there that's working with it. And I think the fruity character is almost like a peach. It's almost like a peach flavor coming through from the Simcoe. I'm pretty from what I'm getting anyway. And it works pretty well with the Belgian, spiciness. And anyway, it works out pretty well. I still, it's a very nice looking beer. I'm swirling it around right now, and the head's still there. So it's clear with a slight bit of haze, but very nice.
But the only thing I'm thinking is that
I don't
have any more, so
yeah.
I've got to come and get some. But anything left in the can? Oh, there we go. Kevin, thanks a lot for coming along.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate it. We're going to look forward to seeing you guys sometime in the May timeframe, hopefully. And appreciate it. Any thoughts of doing a collaboration with your neighbors?
We actually have.
Oh, you have?
Yeah,
oh, my God. I'm behind the eight ball. What did you do?
We made an NEIPA together called The Gang Makes an NEIPA. So
when was that out?
Oh, that was a while ago.
In the fall?
Yeah, in the fall?
Oh, was it that
late
moment?
Fall, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably 4 or 5 months ago.
Yeah.
It was on the Black Horizon system, so.
I got to get that on your smartphone app, so. All right, guys. Well, thanks a lot indeed for coming along, Josh and John. I'm not even going to try. Well, maybe I should. Hang on.
Don't be afraid.
We're Scavage.
Perfect.
All right. Thank you very much. I got it right after all this time. Thanks a lot for allowing us to come along to the brewery and do this. It's a lot of fun. It's always good tasting beers. Finally, Josh, you, I know, have all the details. We always ask this question. What's your phone number?
630-541-9414.
Good man. And where are you located?
We are in Darien. Our address is 1000 North Frontage Road in Darien, but we're actually, the parking lot's behind the building, and it's off of Wilmette. So you go by the brewery, and you turn onto Wilmette, and our driveway's right there.
And don't follow Google, because it takes you west instead of east on Frontage Road. Bastards.
Google does that?
Google does that.
Google's good.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's wacky, man.
Google's the only one that does
Garmin it. Garmin right. doesn't, but
I think there you Google go. You've got to go Garmin.
Yeah.
That's good. So, come on down, try out Miskatonic. Are you doing any beer festivals?
All of them.
We're doing all of them.
Yeah.
All of them.
We're finally that size, and we've got lots of good people that want to go to the fests and help rep us and our staff. So we're lucky enough that I think we're right now up to like 7 weekends between May and August where we have 3 or 4 brewery festivals just in one day. So,
all right. So we just raise our glasses, and basically it's a good night from me.
And good night from him.
And cheers.
Salute.
Cheers.
We don't get much of a clank with our sample glasses, but it's okay.
Na zdrowie.
The thought was there.
Britain Yankee! Britain Yankee! I'll have a pint. No, give us a pint. You got any tetanus? A pint, please, Bob. Give me another pint, please, Bob.